It's Theodore Parker up there on your left. When he took the pulpit in 1848 to preach that sermon, he did so at a church that his fans and friends had established so he would have somewhere to preach. They rented a hall. That's the hall that they met in on the right. They called it the 28th Congregational Society. Not that creative of a name. But Parker in Boston had been refused any existing pulpit. His theology was too radical. He believed that the teachings of Jesus should be applied to his age, that the eternal truth, love your neighbor, means you should love your neighbor, your enslaved neighbor, your woman neighbor denied the right to vote, your poor neighbor. He believed the church existed for the world, for the betterment of the world, to save the souls of those to whom the wrong is done, and to change the souls of those who did the wrong. And he knew which was which. He took to the pulpit that day in 1848 and preached his own installation sermon, for no one would preach it for him. If a lie invade the state, it is for the church to give the alarm. I say it plain, a lie invades the state. I say it plain, sound the alarm. Storm the battlements, raise your voice, a lie invade the state. It actually seems like a lot of lies, doesn't it? So many. But at the core, it is one lie. One giant lie, same as it was in Parker's day, one giant lie, that some lives count more than others, that some votes count more than others, that some stories count more than others. The lie is that the opinions of wealthy, conservative white men are always true, that their anger is righteous, that they are rational and objective, and that the rest of us, the vast majority of us, simply don't count as much as they do. Whether you are a mom fleeing for your life and have your children put in detention for months, or you're a mom of a black teenager who has to teach your child how not to get shot by police when they go outside, or you are a transgender teen who worries every day that someone's rage will mean violence to your body, or you are a survivor telling your story and nobody cares, the lie is that you don't count. That is the lie that invades the state. The lie that invades the state is that we have a democratic republic where the majority, with some protections for the minority, decides how we are governed. We do not. The President of the United States was elected with a minority of votes. The upper chamber of the legislature was elected with a minority of votes. The lower chamber of the legislature is so skewed that the current minority must win by 8 percentage points to capture a slim majority. And the Supreme Court, unless at least 2 members of one party have their conscience awakened, may soon implode as the 5th vote, a wannabe rapist, an unrepentant liar. It is for the church to give the alarm, and I give the alarm. If I and the people to whom I am loyal, women and people of color and the vulnerable, both the man on the road and the outcast Samaritan who stops to help him, if I and the people to whom I am loyal were in the minority, okay, fine. We'd fight for our rights and keep trying to convince the majority to change their mind. If you're in the minority, you have to win the argument. Tell stories, convince people, make claims. I get that. I'm willing to be in the argument. But we're not in the minority. We're the majority. And yet we do not govern. By violating the norms and restricting the vote and drawing lines with very strong creativity through theft and lies and the legacy of a system designed to protect slave owners, an increasingly smaller party of resentment governs a diversifying country. This cannot stand. This isn't politics. This is faith. This is about religion and our values. If lie invade the state, it is for the church to give the alarm. Things seem dire, don't they? Sexual assault and extrajudicial killings are excused and ignored. Children die in poverty while the rich buy their 12th yacht. Wages don't keep up with inflation, but another stock buyback is well underway. Children in cages. Permafrost melting and methane bubbling, and even this government admits that the earth my children will live in will be 7 degrees warmer by century's end. It's bad. And I'm not gonna sugarcoat it or pretend it's okay, because it is not okay. Especially if you're a person who doesn't look like me. You're young or old or a woman or trans or not white. If you have a disability, it's bad. And if you do look more or less like me, but you share my values, our values for human dignity and an earth our children can live in, it's bad. It is for the church to give the alarm. This is the alarm. We are called to act. We are called to act. We are called to be the lightning in the clouds which shines when it is most dark. Parker despaired that no one was calling out against slavery. Where is the cry? He said. But he was wrong. He was calling out. The people that built him a church were calling out. William Lloyd Garrison, the editor of The Liberator, who sat in the pews of that church, was calling out. Julia Ward Howe and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who sat in those pews, were calling out. Frederick Douglass, when he was in Boston, sat in those pews, was calling out. When Abraham Lincoln spoke of the need for a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, he was quoting Theodore Parker. Historians have cast doubt on the great man theory of history, the idea that one person makes a difference, but I'm not so sure they're right about that. One person can make a difference because they inspire other people, because their courage means others speak up. Means others tell their stories. We do not now have a government of the people, by the people, or for the people. We do not. We have a government of the thieves, by the rapists, and for the rich. But I do not surrender to it. And I do not believe we are helpless. We are called to be a light in the darkness. Let your light chase fears away. Let your love bring us together. Let justice show the way. Let your light shine out. The story is not over. The book is not closed. But we are called to action. Now what do we do? To action. So what can you do to save the souls and the lives of those to whom the wrong is done, and to save the souls and mend the ways of those who do the wrong? What can you do? I have a to-do list. You ready? Raise your children well. Someone I know, a mom of two boys, posted the other day, "I think my primary social justice task is to raise my sons to resist evil and respect others." To resist evil and respect others. I think that's right. For every parent of every child, for aunties and grandparents and neighbors, for teachers and Sunday school volunteers, we need to raise children to resist evil and respect others. To be the bystander who intervenes. To be the friend you can trust. To be the one who joins the struggle for justice. To be the one whose light shines in the darkness. It's not just about children either. It's about families and friends. The way that we won marriage equality was mostly at the family table, through conversation. So talk to your friends and your coworkers and your neighbors. Tell your story. Speak up about your values. Don't be silent. Now is not the time. These One-to-one conversations matter. They matter a lot. Next, get local. The national questions are tempting and overwhelming, big and important, but local races matter too. School board, city council, run for something. I want to see a Unitarian Universalist or a friend of Unitarian Universalism on every governmental body in town. How about that? Why not? County board, we got some work to do on the rest. Local races matter. They matter as much about the message that they send about our values as about the policy consequences of that board. The policy consequences matter too. They matter for students and families and neighborhoods. The message matters too. Right here in our town, one of the incumbent state representatives was the state chair for the now president. He was the leading Illinois advocate and organizer for the sexual assaulter, liar, and racist who occupies that office. I would like to send him a message, wouldn't you? Now, I am not allowed by the rules of the IRS to tell you how to vote. Not allowed, but I can tell you that it would be great to have an open-minded, decent, kind, and inclusive man take over that seat. I can't tell you how to vote, but I can tell you I'm glad that my friend Jake Costanza is here this morning. I can't tell you how to vote for Congress either, but I can tell you that when the chips were down, Sarah Dady fought like hell to protect immigrants from evil. I think Sarah's out knocking on doors as we speak. I can tell you it's pretty great when you walk around town and candidate for Congress says, oh, I want you to beat my minister. You want to make a difference? You want to channel your rage? You want an outlet for your disgust at the way things are? You want to shine your light in the darkness and do something useful? Voting is great. You know what's even better? Knocking on doors, making calls. I can't tell you how to vote, but I can tell you that if you ask them, Jake and Sarah will tell you where to show up to get a list of addresses and a script and a postcard to leave if someone doesn't answer the door. You provide the walking shoes. If walking isn't for you, they'll give you a list of telephone numbers to call. If you're not sure if you're registered to vote, if you've moved recently and you want to check on that, Barb will be happy to register to vote after service today. I'm getting real practical here, folks. You got to knock on doors. I see Angelica's here too. You could also get a list of addresses if you live in the 69th to talk to folks who live, who are your neighbors. Yes, and woo, yeah. Our democracy is in peril, but I haven't given up. The practical things you can do, we can all do. The hour is late, but the story is not over. This is the church sounding the alarm. A lie invades the state, and it must be opposed. So raise your children well, vote, get out the vote, get local, stop the elevator. Stop the elevator. I'm done playing nice. Maybe you got that. I'm done playing nice. I don't want to play by the Queensberry rules while my friends' lives are on the line. I don't want to sit in the middle of a row of turtles while those under me are squeezed for their life. I'm done playing nice. Since apparently the rules of society mean that only people who look like me get to get mad in public, God forbid a white woman is emotional in public or a man of color, oh my God, the horror a woman of color raises her voice, God forbid. Since apparently those are not allowed by the powers that be, but people like me get to shout and cry and get mad whenever we like, well, you asked for it. A lie invades the state, when I'm called to speak and to disrupt the order of things. To sit in, block traffic, need be, to refuse to comply. Don't know exactly yet where my leverage points will be, but I'm going to be ready. And I want you to be ready too, whoever you are, when the time comes, to stop the elevator, to tell the truth and ask the question that might help change history. Her name is Maria Gallagher. She's the one on your right. She's 23 years old. The volunteers are distributed to the Senate offices. You go there, you go there, you go there. Stand there by the door, and maybe they'll come by and you'll get in one word edgewise. Probably won't make a difference, but we'll try anyway. So they see the senator, they follow him down the hall, they hold the door. She says, "Don't look away from me while I speak to you." That is a theological claim. This is the injured man on the side of the road. Look at me. And the righteous walk by. But the outcast, the foreign Samaritan, he looks. "Don't look away from me when I speak," Maria says. She tells her story a single sentence and asks the question, "What are you telling me?" Her name is Maria, and you can't tell me that she was not in that moment the face of God, the demand of humanity, "Don't look away from me." An hour later, the senator said, "Okay, I guess we should ask for an investigation." He says that's not the reason why it wasn't Maria. If you believe that, I have got oceanfront property in Kansas to sell you. I don't know if the outcome will change in the end or not, but I know that 1,000 Marias, 10 million Marias must be heard. I know that the elevator must be stopped. Put the beam in the gears of power and say, "No, hell no, no more." I know that Theodore Parker in another sermon preached that though he could not discern exactly how or when, and though it was long, he was sure that the moral arc of the universe bends towards justice. King came 100 years later and reminded us that we do the bending, pull on it. Stop the elevator. Insist on being heard. Lots of people spoke up and called. Most of them were not heard. But Maria was, that day, that moment, for that moment. Will it last? Who knows? But that moment, she was heard. You will not always win the day. Sometimes you will. This is what democracy looks like. It looks like raising a generation of people better than we are, people whose hearts shine in the darkness with love and care. It looks like voting and knocking on doors and running for office yourself, and looks like making society better. And this is what democracy looks like, refusing to be ignored. Stopping the elevator, speaking up, disrupting. When a minority government rules with malice and lies over the majority, then disruption, refusal, fierceness is required. A lie invades the state, and we shall give the alarm, and we shall shine our light. We shall march and love and refuse to be rolled over. This is what democracy looks like. And I'm not ready to give up, and I know you're not ready to give up. There are 36 days until Election Day. There's a lot to do between now and then, and there's a lot to do after that, no matter what happens. Don't think that ends the work. A lie invades the state, and the alarm sounds. We are asked, now what? We must respond in whatever way we can. In our families, in our neighborhoods, in our country, we must respond. It's not about politics. This is faith. This is about what we believe, about what's true and who counts, and whether love shall prevail in heaven and earth, and whether justice will roll down like waters. I haven't given up. The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I still believe in the land that we seek, the land of justice and hope and kinship, the land where every person, every child, every soul is loved and treated with respect, and where righteousness and truth and compassion flows down like a mighty stream. Please rise in body or spirit. And we're going to sing together, "We'll Build a Land." In a moment, I will extinguish our chalice and then read our benediction, and we'll sing our closing blessing. As a congregation that welcomes many ways of being in the world, I invite you to do one of three things. If you'd rather not be touched by others, place your Cross hands over your shoulders. If you'd rather not hold hands because you're getting over an illness or for any other reason, but you are okay with others putting their hands on your shoulders, clasp your hands together. Or reach out and join your hands for those near you. I'll now extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down, there is another truth. You are not alone. We'll sing together our closing blessing.